Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers, co-host of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We are glad you're with us for another week. And Brian, you had a smartphone malfunction on the road.
Yeah, well, actually, I think the term smartphone is...
Did it brick out?
Well, what it does is the display sometimes works and sometimes it doesn't.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, if a call comes in and the display is not functioning, you can't even answer it.
Right.
You know, and you can't get to your emails or your texts. And anyway, when you're on the road and something like that happens, it's...
How old's your phone? Have you upgraded?
3 months.
Oh. Well, it should be under warranty at least.
Well, it is, but it's, like I say, it's just... Very frustrating. And then when I'm on the road...
I wasn't sure if you were one who just, you know, didn't upgrade, but okay, but you did, so.
I suppose this is an allusion to my age again.
No, never. I'd never do that.
I know where you go, buddy. I know you. All right. Anyway, so I'm on the road also this week. I'm in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm all, you know, I'm all pumped up because I'm going to go to my favorite restaurant in Nebraska, right?
Right.
Small problem. I drive there and the place is closed.
Oh.
This is the steakhouse on Cornhusker in Lincoln. It was the oldest continually owned or operated business in the city. 65 years. And they closed it. This place was a masterpiece of fine steaks. It was closed. Oh, boy.
Closed for good or just...
For good. Done.
Wow.
Shut her down. It was... That was hard, buddy.
Yeah. You should research as to why. That's kind of weird. Yeah, if they're continuously running like that, you'd think obviously pretty successful.
Something must have happened. It had changed ownership and, not, you know, who knows.
Oh,
but
yeah.
So what's with you this week?
Oh, well, I just love website hosting. Not... yeah. My web host is probably on its way out. I'm just not happy. I'm not going to say their name. I don't want to trash them on the radio, but it's just been, it's been frustrating.
But you got the sites back up, didn't you?
They are, yeah. There's one site that had a lot, had basically what happened is there's one particular site that was a drain on server resources. I'm not going to bore everybody with all the details, but this web host just decided to deactivate my account without warning me. And I have like like 16 sites on there, and of course I haven't felt well this week. And it's like this is not something I really need, and it's not like I can drop everything to take care of it.
Yeah, you got a life,
right?
So yeah, it's
right. So, I've made a decision. A new website development clients I get in the future, they're going to have to provide their own hosting. I'm not going to do it anymore.
Does this include your existing customers?
I said new.
Don't do this to me, Vanderhart.
I said new. So,
all right. So, who do we have in our VIP line this morning?
We have Ken Ivory. He's a state representative out of Utah, and he is the president and CEO of American Lands Council. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Ken.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. Good to be with you again.
Good to have you. And Ken is your second time on the show. And Ken was a speaker at the Caffeinated Thoughts briefing as well, which we thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, you know, guys, this issue is not going away until we solve the underlying problem. You know, when you think about it as a nation, right? We promise the world that we're the beacon of liberty, that we stand for liberty and property and self-governance and fairness and equality. And yet today, the federal government still controls more than 50% of all land west of the Rockies. less than 5% east of the Rockies. And in Iowa, you've gone from 90% federally controlled land that we talked about at the Caffeinated Thoughts briefing. Mm-hmm. You're down to less than 0.1% because back when your forefathers in Iowa simply stood up and refused to take no for an answer.
I'm trying to think of where the 0.1% of federal land is actually located. Probably some wildlife reserve, I suppose, because we don't have any national parks here or anything like that.
So yeah, think about what's at stake, though, right? I mean, it's 2 years ago the U.S. Supreme Court said the constitutional equality of the states is essential for our republic to function. Our republic doesn't function when you can hold states, all, you know, the 12 states west of the Rockies, when you can hold them hostage and say, we're not going to give you these pittance transfer payments that we extract out of the pockets from people east of the Rockies so that you can keep police and fire and education going. What happens, guys, is they'll come in and say, you want these payment in lieu of taxes subsidies that we've made you dependent on instead of letting you use your own land to be independent and determine your own destiny. If you want these subsidies we take out of the pockets of people in the east, you've got to vote for $1 trillion and hundreds of billions of dollar increase in the federal government. And that happens all the time because Western counties have nowhere else to go.
Well, Ken, relative to the issue of federal lands, we're all hearing an awful lot of the controversy out in Oregon right now. And one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show today is to maybe give us some expertise background with respect to the both the Hammond family, who I think was their situation was the genesis of what subsequently happened with the protest that's going on out there. But anyway, could you give us kind of a rundown, first of all, of the Hammond family and their issues with the Bureau of Land Management, and then subsequently the protest that's going on out there today?
Yeah, let's start with who the Hammonds are. The trial court judge, in the transcript, the trial court judge said these people are the salt of the community, the pillar of the community. You know, president of the Farm Bureau, donate, help out. They're on all, you know, boards in the community. These are good, solid folks. You may have heard the Greg Walden video that went around earlier the week. These are just good, solid pillar of the community types of people. Well, then look at what's happening. They're surrounded by federally managed forested lands. Well, the federal managers, these bureaucrats from thousands of miles away, by the way, think about that for a second. If you have someone from thousands of miles away trying to manage your garden, your unique garden, you know, it'd be like me trying to manage your garden in Iowa because I have a book here in Utah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know your soil, I don't know your climate, I don't know the conditions. That's what this is like. You've got bureaucrats from D.C. that put policy over people, and they say, hey, you know what, we're not going to harvest any trees. We're just going to let them all grow up like weeds. Well, what happens is they get starved out for water because there's way too many. It's overgrown. They get distressed, and they can't fend off the beetles and the pests and the disease they normally would, and they're dead all over the West. And so that's why we're seeing these massive catastrophic fires. So imagine you're the Hammonds. You're surrounded by federally managed forest that's just a tinderbox, catastrophic fire waiting to go up. I mean, it's like living next to a dynamite factory that's run by chain-smoking chimpanzees, you know? I mean, you know this thing is going off at some point, right?
Right.
And so this is who they are, right? So the Hammonds are using preventative fire as a management technique. Federal government does it. Everybody does it, right? So you burn off the invasive weeds that the federal government's not taking care of, and then one of them was a lightning strike, and they set a backfire to keep this fire from raging off of the federal land to burn out their own land. They set the fires on their own land, and it inadvertently got onto 139 acres of federal land, out of 640 million acres, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
139 acres of federal land. Now, never mind that the federal government is burning tens of thousands of acres. It goes onto private land, destroys animals, destroys property, you know, all the time, and nobody stands to account, right?
Right.
So the Hammonds are tried. They're tried on terrorism charges. You know, the guy down in Texas goes into a military base, yells Allah Akbar, shoots everybody up, and that's workplace violence.
Right.
These ranchers, who are the pillar of the community, according to the trial judge, use preventative fire that's a land management technique that even the federal government uses, accidentally It burns 139 acres. They're tried as terrorists. The trial judge said, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. But they were found guilty of what they were charged with. And so the trial judge sentenced the 74-year-old Hammond, the father, to 3 months in jail, and the 50-something son to 1 year. They served their sentence. They went, they served their sentence, they were out. Oh, by the way, the BLM also in the plea agreement said, you have to give us a first right of refusal to your land because we want to gobble up more of your land, which is what this is really all about.
Man.
So they served their sentence, right?
Right.
Then politically motivated, these eco-extremist types and political types, because, you know, the bureaucrats put politics over the health and productivity of the land. They put policy over people. They come back in and say, hey, judge, you didn't have the authority to be lenient on these people that are good, solid pillar of the community people. You have to put them in prison for 5 years. And they brought them back in on the same offense and sentenced them to 5 years in federal prison. That's the basis of what's going on here. That's why there's frustration, which is understandable. Now think about it, okay? Anytime as an individual, as a family, as a business, you guys have a mission to what you do, right? You tell people this is what we stand for.
Right.
Well, as a nation, we tell people we stand for liberty. We stand for property. We stand for equality, and we stand for fairness. And then we go out, as John Kenneth Galbraith, right, noted world-renowned economist, said back in the 80s before he passed away, he said, where socialized ownership of land is concerned, only the USSR and China can claim company with the United States of America.
Man.
We're completely out of balance. We're completely out of harmony with who we tell the world we are. So there's going to be conflict. There's going to be discord. There's going to be frustration.
Ken,
that's the basis of what's going on here.
Ken, when I was looking at the dates of the Hammond case, that's what blew my mind. The first fire that they set was in 2001. The second fire was 2006. And in the 2006 incident, the Harney County District Attorney reviewed the accusation, evidence, and charges and determined the accusations against the Hammonds did not warrant prosecution and dropped all the charges.
Right.
5 years later, then the feds come in. And as I understand it, the Hammonds were not only found guilty of the 2006 event, but the 2001 event, over a decade after the fact. And when I look at these dates, this smells really bad.
Yeah, yeah. There are land grabs going on all the time. And so then you think of, when you think of the double standard, right, in Oregon, the EPA releases millions of gallons of toxins into a pristine Colorado River, turns it Gatorade yellow, and no harm, no foul.
Hmm. No problem there. So
in Utah, you've got in Iron County, Utah, the BLM manages the wild horses and burros. They're everywhere. Oh, my gosh, they're ruining the ecosystem. Right in the Wild Horse and Burro Act, there's an express limit on how many there can be. It's the law. You can only have this many, and if it gets over that, you've got to reduce it immediately, and here's what you have to do. BLM just admits it's completely violating its law. It's ruining the ecosystem in Iron County and Beaver County, Utah. And the BLM's answer is, hey, all you ranchers, you've got to cut back your grazing some more to make room for these wild horses that are violating our own federal law because we can't manage them.
You're listening to Caffeinated. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have State Representative Ken Ivory out of Utah, who's CEO of American Lands Council.
Ken, real quickly, because we've just got a couple minutes left, but tell us now about the folks that are out there in the midst of this protest. As I understand it, the Hammonds aren't real wild about being represented by these folks.
Yeah, so here's the challenge. I mean, you understand the frustration. The frustration is real. It's not going away until we free the lands. We treat all states equally and fairly. There's no constitutional authority for the federal government to keep all this land. It's just a power grab. You know, it's governments amass unbridled power. That's why the Constitution was designed the way it was. But here's the real solution. We have all the power we need in the Constitution. You know, Declaration of Independence said they derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. So just like Iowa and Missouri and Illinois and Florida did when they were 90% federally controlled from the 1820s to the 1850s. There was a guy, Thomas Hart Benton, Democratic senator from Missouri, stood up for you all as the ringleader, and he said, we need to fix our eyes steadily on the period of the speedy extinction of the federal title to all the lands within our states. And they rallied, and so the people hired representatives that were relentless, and they relentlessly pushed on Congress and said, look, you've got to treat all these states fairly and equally and honor who we tell the world we are and who we tell our own people we are. And you all succeeded in this very same issue. So the solution really is we've got to get in the game. Go to AmericanLandsCouncil.org, sign in, join the team, get your name in there. You guys in Iowa, you're the ones leading the way. You need to pick a president that's going to be a Thomas Hart Benton type that solved the problem for Iowa when you guys were 90% federally controlled. You need to pick a president that understands that, guys, look at it. Releasing, turning back 600 million acres of land so that it can be healthy and productive, that's like a modern-day Louisiana purchase, that we can have our hands on that rudder if we will.
Great. Where can people find out more?
So, yeah, AmericanLandsCouncil.org, and then also American Lands Council Facebook page. And then, guys, I'm actually going to be transitioning as the director of the Free the Lands Project with Federalism in Action. So look for that coming forward as well. That's going to be a national educational effort where we really start educating east of the Rockies as well. There's going to be a big event coming up at Heritage Foundation.
Great.
The 19th, and you can stream that. So AmericanLandsCouncil.org. Sign in, join the team. This is a solution big enough for an environmental, economic, constitutional
renaissance. And you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So, I would like to welcome our guest who's on the line, Steve Myers of Cyhawk Thoughts. He, along with Chuck Utek, started Cyhawk Thoughts in 2011 to be a single source of information for fans of both Iowa and Iowa State athletics, and Steve is actually a fan of ISU athletics, and we'll forgive him for that.
No, he pays attention to the Hawks.
Well, that's good.
And anyway,
as well he should.
Yeah, anyway, good morning, Steve. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So, Rose Bowl.
What happened, Steve?
Let's just get it over with.
Yeah, what happened to the Hawkeyes there, buddy?
Well, Shane, I'll try to be nice, I really don't think that, you know, anyone should be too surprised at what happened in the first quarter of the Rose Bowl. If you look back the last 4 years, Iowa, last four bowl games have resulted in a 98-0 first quarter deficit. So can you be really surprised at a 35-0 when last year you're down 35-0 to Tennessee? The year before that, I believe, it was Oklahoma 14-0, and before that, 14-0 to LSU.
So let's stop for a second. It's hard to believe because the regular season doesn't go that way. They generally outscore their opponents in the first quarter, even tougher opponents. Now, granted, I know some say their schedule this year was not as tough. And I know I admit their second half of their schedule wasn't very tough, but you know, the first half is actually wasn't a cakewalk.
I wouldn't say it was either. Pittsburgh and mm-hmm. Wisconsin, and you know, those are two quality opponents. And Wisconsin beat USC in the bowl game, I believe.
Right, and let's see. Well, Northwestern beat Stanford, and we tromped Northwestern. So, Christian McCaffrey, you know, kind of one thought I had, and Iowa kind of slowed down, and they finally, I think, in the second half, got their groove. Unfortunately, they had a huge deficit to overcome, and they're not known to be a comeback team like that, because they're generally not behind like that. But I know in the first half, I was so frustrated because Stanford literally made the Iowa Hawkeyes look like they were a high school team. And I remember I tweeted out, it's like the Iowa fans showed up for the Rose Bowl, but it didn't look like the team did.
I saw that tweet.
Because they looked like they were asleep. They weren't tackling. I mean, they weren't even, you know, it's just, it was frustrating.
But having said that, Steve, just how good is Christian McCaffrey?
Well, I mean, he's the real deal. And kind of go back on Shane's point there about being asleep. They were either asleep or they just got put on their heels right away with in the first 11 seconds with that 75-yard touchdown pass. And from there, it just kind of went downhill. You're talking 48 yards rushing on 38 carries for Iowa. That's definitely not an Iowa stat.
No, definitely not. And obviously, they had to throw more in the second half to try to get back in it. And they actually ended up having more passing yardage than Stanford in the game, which was kind of surprising how that went. But, I mean, McCaffrey made up, you know, let's see, almost 279 yards of Stanford's total offense was McCaffrey.
Yeah. He's definitely was the difference maker in the game. I just don't know if anyone on Iowa's team could, you know, emulate his abilities when they were preparing for him. But, Brian, you said, you know, how good I think he should have been the Heisman winner. I think it was a shame he wasn't. 1988 was the year Barry Sanders set the record for all-purpose yards in a season. He was rewarded with the Heisman that year. The player that breaks that record 27 years doesn't get the Heisman. I mean, come on. So that's how good he is. You know, Barry Sanders-esque, you know, at the college level. I think, you know, he didn't get the Heisman because, well, he wasn't on a team named Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
But if there wasn't a rule that you had to declare after your junior year to the NFL draft, I mean, he's ready right now as a true sophomore. According to a strength and conditioning coach, he runs a 4.5 40, which could even be better by the time he runs his combine. Check this out. The average NFL running back runs a 4.59, and the wide receivers and cornerbacks run a 4.55, so he's already ahead of the average.
Wow.
And he's so smart. He's just a smart football player. So you add the talent, I think you have a very, very special football player right there.
When he goes pro, what position do you anticipate that he's going to end up playing?
I don't see how you don't put him at a running back that, you know, he kind of a Darren Sproles type guy, where you put him out in the flat, and if he catches the ball, look out, or he can hit those holes so quickly. I think you got to leave him there, in my opinion. At worst, you know, a slot receiver, but I think he sticks at the running back position.
I can't. Yeah, I definitely can't see how you not play him at running back, being that fast. There were a lot of things that he did that impressed me. I still think, you know, had he been touched, you know, at the line of scrimmage, he wouldn't have gotten the yardage in the first half that he made, but
he does strike me though as a guy that could play the wide out.
Definitely, well, I mean, for crying out loud, he was their leading receiver too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely he could play either, and he's fast, and that's in either position you want that. So
that was what I was impressed with the most. You flat out said that, you know, he wasn't touched at the line. A lot of that was on him. He's right. quick enough to get to the outside faster than a lot of people. But what I saw is even though he may have beat his offensive line to the corner, he waited for the blocks to happen, and then he made his cut down the hole.
Yeah.
That's a smart football player.
Well, he has great vision, definitely. I mean, yeah, any running back that has the patience to wait for blocks, I mean, that they're gonna make some yards. They're going to make some plays.
Steve, you mentioned Alabama. What are your thoughts on the national championship game coming up on Monday night? Both of those teams dominated their opponents in the playoff games.
They did. But unfortunately, I just don't see Clemson coming out on top. But I'm really hoping I'm wrong. You know, the best two teams are playing for the championship. I just think one's at a completely different level right now. Alabama's run defense is so good, and that's a lot of what Clemson wants to do. The one thing that could cause Alabama some trouble is if Clemson can get their quarterback Watson out of the pocket early to kind of either decide to use his arm or his legs. And if they can get to the outside and start making some plays, that might open up the middle of the defensive line a little bit, which could give their running back some room to go north and south. And if that happens, it could be a good game, but I kind of see a 32-13 type win for Alabama.
Okay.
I just wanted to ask a question. You know, you mentioned the past 4 years as far as Iowa Hawkeyes and bowl games, and it seems like when Coach Kurt Ferentz first came to Iowa, he made some turnarounds with Iowa's bowl performance because Hayden Fry's performance and record in the Rose Bowl was dismal as well. And it just never seemed like Iowa was really prepared. And at first it seemed like Ferentz was changing up some things, and they seemed to be better prepared coming in the bowl games. Do you think they've let up with that? I mean, what's going on?
Well, just a guess, but I think, I mean, if you look at those four last bowl games, three SEC teams and then arguably the best team in the Big 12 over the last, 10 years, did they run into just more speed, except for the Stanford game, of course, but the right. LSU and the Tennessee game and then the Oklahoma game, there's a lot of speed there.
Yeah.
I don't know that Stanford has as much speed as those other teams when Iowa played them. They just had McCaffrey. So
sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah.
Steve, do you see the playoffs going to eight teams in the near future? And if so, who's going to actually make that call?
Well, obviously not in the very near future because we didn't have any type of, controversy with the teams that were going in. You know, if we didn't have losses like Stanford's late season loss to Oregon or Houston's late season loss to UConn, there might be some smoke, some fire going on. But since that didn't happen, you're able to kind of, wipe the sweat off your brow and say, we can stick with four. I think what's going to ultimately make that decision is a bit more controversy, and then I believe the national media really has to eat it up and really start pushing it, and then that way the fans get on board. And I think once the national media and the fans really start to talk about, a potential controversy about a team being left out, you're going to see it stay as is.
Very true.
Do you think that would be a good thing, though, for the sport? To see it go to an eight-team playoff?
I think it would be good for the sport because I think you get, you eliminate the one Power Five conference potentially not getting in. You eliminate the AA, the American Athletic Conference, who had an unbelievable season this year with Memphis and Houston and Temple. I mean, that was a strong conference. And, if Houston does win at UConn, they may have still not gotten in, and that would have been a perfect season for them. So I think you eliminate that type of stuff, and it gives a team like Houston to go in there and play the big boys, in which they did. They beat Florida State. So who knows? They may be playing for the national championship if they would have had a chance to get in there. So I think it's really good. And of course, they're going to make more money off of it, so who's going to not want that?
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio on the Truth Network, 99.3 FM.
We've got 4 minutes left here, Steve. Let's shift to basketball here for a moment. Let's talk about the Hawkeyes men's basketball team. They have had some big wins recently.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I was actually on a preseason podcast, and this was coming off of the Augustana exhibition loss, which I still kind of scratch my head on. But I said that the Iowa basketball team was going to hover between top 15, top 25. Kind of got laughed at once or twice by the co-host on that podcast, but here they are sitting at 19, and I definitely could be wrong on my projection. They end up could being a top 10 team in my opinion. That comeback at Purdue was actually even bigger than the Michigan State game, just because of the, how they did it coming back from 19 points. And
right,
you can't point at someone like Hammonds being out for the game like you could Valentine being out for Michigan State.
Well, the Hawks have some awesome shooters. There's no question about that. When those guys are on, they light it up.
Mm-hmm. They have senior leadership. They have talent. And then, of course, a guy named Jared Utah. So they're in good shape.
Yeah, definitely. It just seems like, you know, consistency, though. It's just that seems to be something that they've lacked. You agree, disagree?
Well, yeah, I think but I think that plagues every basketball team. It's so hard to get 19, 20-year-old kids to play for 40 minutes, both with the right kind of effort and the right kind of smarts, without making a mistake, and the confidence plays a lot in these kids as well. So I think that plagues everyone, and I think they'll be okay.
Along those lines, the Cyclone men came up a little short against the Sooners down in Norman. How do you grade Coach Steve Prohm's performance so far? 2 minutes left, Steve.
Yeah, I don't think that loss was anything to be ashamed of. They played very well. As far as Steve Prohm, probably an A-. He had a lot of expectations coming in this year, which is really
right.
Tough to come into for a brand-new coach. He'd probably be closer to an A if he wasn't near the top of the NCAA for three-point percentage by opponents. So, you know, he needs to shore up that defensive closeouts a little better.
He does, because the Clones do seem to just get bombed from downtown, from everybody, really, mm-hmm. and it has clearly hurt them. The Oklahoma-Kansas game the other night lived up to all the hype, and Kansas just barely defended Allen Fieldhouse. What do you think about that game?
Well, I still think Oklahoma's better than Kansas. They came in off of a really tough game against Iowa State 2 days earlier, and then mm-hmm. still had to go to three overtimes and still just about knocked them off. And what can you say about Buddy Hield? 46 points at KU. That was pretty amazing.
That guy's a monster.
He is. I think Prohm has to feel pretty good about holding him to 22 at Norman.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of which, just how good is the Big 12 in basketball this year?
It's a great league. A lot of conferences are top-heavy, but they have bottom feeders at the bottom. And the Big 12 is top three-heavy, in my opinion, but there's no gimmies away from home. You can ask West Virginia, who battled all night against TCU. Texas went into Texas Tech and lost. Iowa State just played Texas Tech and snuck out with a win. So how it relates to the tournament, though, one could look at last year and say, well, it's a completely different beast, but I think 6, possibly 7 get in this year.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Thanks for coming on, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. This is Shane Vanderhart, Brian Myers, and it's time for our news rundown.
News you can use. All right, first up, President Obama issues gun restrictions via executive action. According to CNN, President Barack Obama grew emotional Tuesday as he made a passionate call for a national sense of urgency to limit gun violence. He was introduced by Mark Barden, whose son Daniel was killed in the 2012 massacre at Sandy Hook. Obama circled back to that shooting in the final moments of his speech. "Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad," Obama said, pausing to wipe away tears. He added, "And by the way, it happens on the streets of Chicago every day," referring to his hometown where he began his political career. The White House is seeking to expand background checks for buyers. The measure clarifies that individuals in the business of selling firearms register as licensed gun dealers, effectively narrowing the so-called gun show loophole, which exempts most small sellers from keeping formal sales records.
Go to caffeinatedthoughts.com and check out Chuck Grassley sent out a myths and facts about Second Amendment and gun laws, and he basically debunks this. This so-called gun show loophole is really not a loophole at all, and it's been used to fearmonger, but folks who are buying, these dealers are being checked out, and you know nobody's getting these without a background check.
Well, one of the things I noticed was that even the people, according to the polls, even the people that are supportive of the president's action here, are very skeptical that it will do anything to reduce gun violence.
Well, the thing is that these people are required to register as licensed gun dealers. Federal law already requires this.
But you have to, quote unquote, do something, okay? Oh. So the government is doing something. Obama is doing something. Oh, I suppose this makes a lot of people feel better.
He's giving a speech.
Well, whatever.
Okay.
You see the point. What this is what they do. Is they say, okay, this is a problem, so therefore we must do something. And the something is always either irrelevant or ineffectual.
Right.
But they do it, and I don't know if it makes them feel better or makes their constituents happy with them. I'm
right.
Not sure. But
It's just that people have lost their collective minds when it comes to basically some of these gun laws, and we just need some gun sense here in the United States. Roxanne Conlon this morning tweeted out, basically, my paraphrase, Donald Trump said something, and she said he was crazy, which I can't totally argue with. But she went
what?
But she went ahead and said, you know, basically, because he said he was going to get rid of gun-free zones. And she said, get rid of gun-free zones? We're going to have gunfights in schools!
Yeah.
Because we're just going to... Just getting rid of a gun-free zone doesn't mean you're going to allow students to carry weapons.
I don't know, buddy. When I hear this stuff, I just think to myself, you're right. People have collectively lost their minds.
It's like all that a gun-free zone does is tell the shooter where they can go, places of the least resistance.
That's it, exactly.
Right on.
That's it, exactly. Okay, next up, Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore attempts to halt gay marriage licenses. According to Reuters, federal prosecutors in Alabama said probate judges should issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples despite being told otherwise by the state's chief justice. But at least two counties on Thursday stopped giving out licenses altogether. U.S. attorneys Joyce White Vance and Kenyon Brown said they have grave concerns about Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore's order because it advised the state's probate judges to disobey a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that legalized same-sex marriage nationwide last year. Government officials are free to disagree with the law, but not to to disobey it.
Can we just make a just an observation here? What law? What law are they disobeying? Crickets. Okay.
Here you go.
Point made. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Now, if Mike Ferris was here, he would still say that the effect of the ruling does make it the law of the land. Just saying. There is a legitimate date here. A legitimate debate here.
It's the whole Marbury versus Madison court case, v. Madison court case, yeah, about the effect of court opinions, I know, judicial review.
Okay, gay marriage supporters denounced Moore's order. Really?
Shocker.
Shocker. And predicted it would be ignored. It'll be interesting to see how many of the counties down there just say, that's it, we're done, we're out of the marriage business.
Which, that's probably not a bad plan B. You can't get accused of violating
court orders. You going to be all right?
I'm trying. I'm just getting choked up by this news.
Yeah. I think my co-host may need to be hospitalized.
I need a lung transplant, stat.
All right, the global market freakout of 2016 just got worse. According to CNN Money, the latest scare came on Thursday as China's stock market crashed 7% overnight and crude oil plummeted to the lowest level in more than 12 years. The Dow dropped 392 points on Thursday, the S&P 500 fell 2.4%, and the NASDAQ tumbled 3%. The wave of selling has knocked the Dow down 911 points. That's more than 5% so far just this year. That's the worst four-day percentage loss to start a year in history, according to FactSet stats that go back to 1897. The NASDAQ, down over 6% in 2016, is off to its bleakest start since 2000. Investors have started the new year in panic mode. Ed Yardeni, president of investment advisory Yardeni Research. Both the Dow and NASDAQ officially closed on Thursday in a correction, signaling the first 10% drop from previous highs since last summer.
Hmm. Not good news.
No, it's not good news.
So hopefully we'll just, yeah, I'm not going to check my retirement account. Just, you know, let that ride out.
Any mention of this being somewhat tied to the Fed's kicking up the interest rate?
I heard... I'm not going to be able to... The guy with Mad Money.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know what you're talking about. I can't think of his name either.
But he was saying that the Fed needs to be careful here. But the big thing right now is just China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, China has this interesting situation, and I don't know that much about it, but when they went to a capitalistic system, they decided that, well... Everybody else has a stock exchange. I guess we should have one too. But seriously, their idea was that the stocks would always go up.
Yeah.
And so when they started having trouble and the stocks started dropping, the government just said, that's enough of that, and started pulling the chain. They have what's called a circuit breaker in place now where if things start to drop, they shut it down. Okay. And the Donald has started an ad blitz.
And Donald can beat China.
He can beat
China.
Yeah, he doesn't like China. Donald Trump and his team were planning his presidential campaign. They drew up a budget of $25 million for television advertising in the third quarter of this year.
Mm.
But they wound up spending zero for the rest of 2015. What's interesting is during that same period, Jeb Bush had spent over $40 million. To put that in perspective. So the Donald's going to dump some money into advertising.
For what percentage of the polls? Because right now, Rubio and Christie are beating the snot out of the establishment lane.
Yeah, that's what's interesting about this.
Yeah. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
I'm sorry if what I said offended you, but you made me mad. Can we just forget this and move on? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Apologies are critical to conflict. They can either open the gate to a path of forgiveness or slam you into the ditch of bitterness. An apology like the one in our opener can cause damage because it does not request a change of relationship, but rather places the blame on the recipient and sidesteps the issue. There is no indication that the person really sees his own contribution to the problem, and no hope is given for change. A true apology communicates understanding, remorse, and a commitment to change. An excellent guideline is Peacemaker Ministries' 7 A's of an Apology. You can find the 7 A's at our website, crosswalkcounseling.org. Or to get coaching for your big apology, call us at 515-635-5465. That's 515-635-5465.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Banner, Brian Myers. Have you checked out CaffeinatedThoughts.com? Because while we're on the radio, we blog, too, a lot. So please read us. Also want to encourage you to check out our Facebook page if you haven't been. You can go to Facebook.com/CAFF, C-A-F-F, Thoughts. We're also on Twitter, the same, basically the same handle there. It's twitter.com/CAFF, C-A-F-F, Thoughts. So we'd appreciate it if you like us on Facebook, if you follow us on Twitter. Keep up with all the updates we're doing.
And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable, yet you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't.
This one's from The Guardian.
He's laughing and he hasn't even read it yet.
TheGuardian.com.
You can do this, Brian.
Sorry. Oh, man. A federal judge in San Francisco has ruled that a monkey who took a now famous selfie photograph cannot be declared the copyright owner of the photos.
What?
Oh, my goodness.
U.S. District Judge William Orrick said in a tentative opinion Wednesday that while Congress and the president can extend the protection of law to animals as well as humans, there is no indication that they did so in the Copyright Act. The lawsuit filed last year by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Oh, well, there, that explains it.
Sought a court order allowing PETA to administer all proceeds from the photos for the benefit of the monkey, which they identified as 6-year-old Naruto. Hmm. Naruto the monkey. The photos were taken during a 2011 trip to Sulawesi, is that right?
Yeah, that sounds close.
Indonesia,
enough.
By British nature photographer David Slater, who asked the court to dismiss the case, you think?
Mm-hmm.
He says the British copyright obtained for the photos by his company, which is Wildlife Personalities Limited, should be honored worldwide. However, the photos have been widely distributed elsewhere by outlets, including Wikipedia, which contend that no one owns the copyright to the images because they were taken by an animal, not a person.
Yeah, there's that actually has some merit as far as not having copyright at all, but saying it goes to the monkey, no.
Well, can I point out, though, that this guy, it was probably his camera, right?
I mean, and that's where he has a claim because it was his equipment.
Last year, the U.S. Copyright Office issued an updated compendium of its policies, including a section stipulating that it would register copyrights only for works produced by human beings.
So,
are you kidding me?
That's funny.
Get this. It specified that works by animals, whether a photo taken by a monkey or a mural painted by an elephant, would not qualify.
It's kind of like, you know, because here's a simple question. Who do you pay the royalties to? Who gets the licensing fee? Who can really legally claim that?
Well, look, maybe the monkey gets, instead of, you know, Bitcoin or dollars, we just pay it in bananas or something.
Probably just paying peanuts.
Yeah, we'll license this photo for an entire year if you send us 300 bananas.
He's grieved because he only got paid peanuts.
That's right.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe the thing that's most shocking about this story is the fact that a federal judge in San Francisco actually shot this down.
That's a good point. Send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We will give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show. Unless, of course, you're an animal.
This is Shane Vanner, Brian Myers. Thanks for listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.